ओम विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रस्थाय भूतले श्रीमति भक्तिवेदांत स्वामिनिति नामने नमस्ते सरस्वते देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषा शून्यवाणी पश्चाचादेशधारिणे ओम ज्ञानम तिमरंदस्य गणंजन शलाखय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येनम तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः. I'm offering my obeisances unto Srila Prabhupada, my spiritual master, who so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was standing in the midst of darkest ignorance. So this evening, we have in front of us Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, Knowledge of the Absolute. This is text number 5. So this is a Sanskrit transliterated into Roman alphabet, so we can chant this mantra together. I'll say each word and you say it after me. And just by chanting you become purified. Translation. Besides these, O mighty armed Arjuna, there is another superior energy of mine which comprises the living entities who are exploiting the resources of this material inferior nature. Before I read Prabhupada's purport, let me just put this verse in its context. And this chapter is called Knowledge of the Absolute. And Krishna has said to Arjuna, now I'm going to explain to you everything there is. I'm going to explain to you everything phenomenal, that is to say material, and everything noumenal or noumenous, that is to say spiritual. And when you know this, you'll know everything there is to know. Now, when I first saw this verse in Bhagavad Gita, I said, how's he going to do that? This is, you know, a few verses. But as we'll see, Krishna actually does it. He kind of gives a prise or a capsule description, a map of reality. So first, in the previous verse, first of all he said, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego, these eight comprise my separated material energies. Bina Prakriti Ashtada. Eightfold separated energies. So that's matter. There's a sequence here. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. Now this talks about what we call matter. Of course, it sounds a little bit old-fashioned to us in the 20th century. Who are used to have the catalog of matter begin with hydrogen and then helium and, you know, with a periodic table of the elements where you go up and you start adding protons and electrons and neutrons and so on. We have a different scheme for categorizing matter. And so here Krishna has a scheme, it's a little broader. And so we say this is primitive. Earth, water, fire, air, ether. Ether, well, but if you look at it, what this is really saying, or to put it in a different terminology, we can say solids. Earth, solid things. Water, liquids. Fire, radiant energy. Air, gases. Ether means space. So what did they go from grosser to subtler, from the more tangible to our senses to the less tangible or perceptible by us. So solids, liquids, gases, radiant energy, and then space. Space is not nothing. It's a very subtle element. So it's not very tangible or not very perceptible, but Scientists have said that a friend of mine who's a physicist says to describe empty pages, space takes pages of equations. So if it takes pages of equations and to describe empty space in quantum physics, then that's not nothing. And also, space has other properties. For example, people measure the curvature of space. So it can bend and curve according to gravitational fields, they say. So solids, liquids, gases, radiant energy in space, this is matter. And then he says these things, mind, intelligence, and false ego. In Sanskrit, manas, buddhi, ahankara. These are called subtle matter. Different from spirit. In the verse that we have today, this is describing spirit. But here is describing subtle matter, mind, intelligence, and false ego. Now the limit of material science so far is earth, water, fire, air, and ether. There's still a debate going on whether there's such a thing as mind or and so on. I won't have time, but Vedic science is very precise, and what we would just call the mind, and they divide into three divisions, manas, buddhi, ahankara. Again, subtler and subtler divisions. So what we call mind is, according to the Vedas, subtle form of matter. It's like in our body, the body that we have is now made up of, we actually have two bodies. One is the gross body, earth, water, fire, air, and ether. Solids, liquids, gases, radiant energy. There's heat coming out of our body, 98.6 degrees Fahrenheit. And space. And then we also have our mind thinks and feels and wills and our intelligence, which determines the focus of our attention and our idea of ourself, our ego. Those mental functions, what we call a mind, this is the subtle body. Made of matter. And so these elements, these eight elements, which Krishna says, Bina Prakriti Astada, these are my separated material energies. And these energies are organized in a certain way to make the bodies of living beings. And the living beings are described in this verse. He says, the first, Aporeya, Apara, Iyam. Ittaha. Besides this, apara. Apara means inferior. Besides this inferior energy. So this is the energy here, this eightfold Bina Prakriti Astada. See, the word is Prakriti. So Prakriti in Sanskrit means energy. So besides this apara energy, there is another energy which is Param. So apara means inferior and param means superior. So there is a superior, another prakriti. So it says basically there's two kinds of prakriti or two kinds of energies which are in this material world. Inferior, earth, water, fire, air, and ether. And then another. And what is this energy here? Jiva Bhuta. It is the living souls which are exploiting this earth, water, fire, air, and ether, and so on here in this material world. Prabhupada says here in his purport, first he describes just what I said to you, and then he says, the cosmic manifestation has no power to act unless it is moved by the superior energy, the living entity. So the jiva is the living force. In other words, here is my body, which is made up of the inferior energy. And I am the soul in this body. I am neither the gross body nor the subtle body, but I am the soul. And as long as the soul is in the body, it is moving and working and operating. As soon as the soul leaves the body, which we call death, as soon as the soul pulls out of the body, immediately it becomes inert. It's lifeless. So this is matter. Here's something that's made of matter. You see, it doesn't yell when I hit it. It doesn't protest. It's completely an object. It's in no way a subject. It's lifeless, it's dead, it's inert. It has no significance for itself. It has significance for us. We can utilize it, see, exploiting. So we have taken this matter and we've made it, we've fashioned it into something that we can use. Here out of this, some metals have been taken out of the earth and they've been fashioned. So we've exploited the matter here to do various things for us. It's just an object. But here I'm taking up room. I'm also got my material dimensions. But I'm also here, the jiva, this other energy. That's the living being, that the living beings that are animating all these bodies. Anytime you see life, there's a soul. And here he just mentions that there's not different kinds of souls. It's not like there's a vegetable soul and an animal soul and a human soul. There's the same kind of soul, the same kind of jiva, but some are in vegetable bodies, some are in animal bodies, and some are in human bodies. Those different kinds of, all these different bodies are like different machines made of material energy. And the different kinds of jivas are animating them and making them operate. This is how this world is coming about. In other words, the world we see about us, which Krishna is describing, this inferior energy and this superior energy, the two, they flow together and make up the world. Now, the reason it's important, one reason it's important to understand this is there is a modern philosophy, it goes back, but especially a prevalent today, that there is only matter. And that everything can be reduced to matter. So one effort people try to make is try to explain how life came from matter. Now Krishna says something different here. He says that the living principle, the jiva, is fundamental, irreducible factor in creation. It is not that when matter gets to a certain level of complexity, it becomes alive and conscious. It starts to undergo experiences. If you look at the material energy, that is what our science today deals with. It deals with matter. The approach of material science is a very useful approach for many, many things. The one place it's not useful is actually telling us the truth. It can help us make cars and rocket ships and so many things. And there's a reason. Modern science has a methodological limitation. It deals with our experience insofar as it can be expressed in terms of numbers. If you can't quantify it, then science can't get a handle on it. So that's what science does. It takes earth, water, fire, air, and ether and puts a ruler up to it, or puts it on a scale or other kind of meter by which they can express the business in terms of numbers. This is very useful, because you express it in terms of numbers, then you can start to manipulate. It says they're trying to exploit these resources. So this is one way we exploit, a sophisticated way of exploiting these resources. We express it in terms of numbers, and then you can do so many kinds of mathematical operations, and you can predict the outcomes of things and control things and make things the way you want them. There's nothing, you know, untoward about that. That's what material science does. And it does it with some success. We make some progress along this way. So far, no quarrel, really. The quarrel comes about is when material science, which starts, remember, it starts with this methodological limitation. We are only going to deal with reality insofar as we can express it in terms of numbers. Then some people turn around and say, if you can't express it in terms of numbers, it doesn't exist. How do you know? Is that an empirical statement? You don't know. What it is a statement of, if we can't handle it, then it's not there. That's just pride. That's all. And what can't science deal with? Well, one thing it has trouble dealing with is consciousness. It has trouble dealing with consciousness. Where does consciousness come from? How do you express consciousness in terms of numbers? You can't, really. So there's a difficulty. And actually, some people are dedicated to say there is no such thing. For example, people who want to carry this materialistic program out, there's a whole group of them in the field of artificial intelligence. Carnegie Mellon University and a few other places, you know, in Pittsburgh. And their program is that if they can create a computer program that can make a computer behave in such a way that if you're dealing with that computer and you can't tell whether it's a cleverly programmed computer or a human being, then, for all practical purposes, it's a human being. Because they want to say is that all you are is a cleverly programmed computer. A self-programmed computer. There's no programmer out there like they are, of course, but somehow or other, that's all you are. And a cleverly programmed computer is completely expressible in terms of numbers. Long strings of ones and zeros. So, seriously, this program is there to do this. They think that once they can make, this is called the Turing test, once they can make a computer that you can't tell the difference, you're so dull, you can't tell, is this my wife or is this a computer? May want to look again at who you married, but you can't tell the difference, but anyway. This is the idea. But here Krishna is saying, no, no, there's something else. This, the soul, is there. It's not just matter, but is the animating factor. There's really something quite wrong. You see, the symptom of the presence of the soul is consciousness. Consciousness is not due to matter. As we said, matter, let's say that matter is completely expressible in terms of numbers. So all there are structures of matter. And say there's nothing in the universe but that. And say over the course of time, these structures of matter, expressible in terms of numbers, get more and more complicated and intricate. Then how does it happen that at a certain time there pops into being something entirely new, which is not just more structures of matter, but the experience of structures of matter? There is consciousness. The experience of structures of matter is not just another structure, it's something else again. So you really cannot reduce consciousness or the experience of things, the spiritual principle, to matter. And this is why we see what Krishna, we can understand what Krishna says. These are two fundamental things. One, there is matter. And the other, there is spirit. And the symptom of that spirit is consciousness. And this consciousness is fundamental and irreducible. You can't break it down into something else or something smaller. If there's a fundamental material particles, there is also a fundamental anti-material particle. And we can call the soul a particle because according to the Svetashvatara Upanishad, the Vedic sages tell us thousands and thousands of years ago that the soul is 1/10,000th the tip of a hair in size. 1/10,000th. That means you take a tip of a hair, let's assume a human hair, and you do it, you know, what is it, 100 times this way and 100 times that way, you have 1/10,000th. If that is a human hair, that's about 1/4 of an angstrom unit, which is really very small. You can't see it even with an electronic scanning microscope. Anyway, this little tiny soul is actually, look what it does, you know, builds Manhattan, Disney World. I mean, it's pretty powerful for being so small because it can shove around matter like this. So anyway, this is what Krishna said. This whole world, that these two things, this material body and the soul. Now the soul is spiritual. And this means that this, for the soul, as Krishna explains in the second chapter, herein, from this book, we'll learn something about the soul. Otherwise, you can go through pages and pages of scientific journals and you'll see there's no mention of this. Because in one respect, modern material science is very primitive. It can only deal with earth, water, fire, air, and ether, and there it just about stops. They can't even get a handle on mind, intelligence, false ego, what to speak of the soul. But in the Bhagavad Gita, I mean, Krishna's describing what there is here. He made the whole thing. He really knows better than anybody. So he describes to us what is the soul. So in the second chapter, we'll see. For the soul, he says, there is no birth or death at any time. For the soul, there is no coming into being or going out of being, not in the past, not in the present, not in the future. Unborn, eternal, undying, primeval, he is not slain when the body is slain. Nahanyate hanyamane sharire. So this means that us, the consciousness in this body, now you can see, I think if you spend a minute to understand what we mean by consciousness. It's if you look, you're aware of everything around you. You're a center of consciousness, just as I'm a center of consciousness. I'm sitting here in this particular body, which is this instrument that's given to me, and I'm aware of the outside world through my senses. I'm seeing through these eyes, I'm hearing through these ears, I feel pressure through the skin and so on. And everything that happens, I'm aware of it. So first of all, I'm conscious of the world outside me. And then I'm also conscious of my own senses working and operating. Just as I witness this world around me, I also witness my own senses working. I'm conscious that my eyes are seeing. I'm conscious that my ears are hearing. I'm conscious. And I can not only see, so I can see my own body working. I see the outside world. I see my own body working. And what the soul is, the consciousness, that's the final seer. And not only that, my mind is thinking. There are feelings and thoughts and so on, desires going through my mind. And I'm also seeing those. So finally, there's just the pure seer. There's this witness in my body, and I am that witness. My body goes through so many changes. I have been the witness as this body, I start off being kind of aware I have a little child's body, and then my body grows old, becomes a young person's body, then a middle-aged body, and is now going to become an old body. And so my body goes through all these changes, and I sit there and I watch all this happening. And my mind goes through so many different changes, happiness and distress and so on, anger and peace. And I'm the witness of all those changes in my mind. That witness is you. You're not the body and you're not the mind. You're the seer, and you see besides yourself all other things. That seer is eternal. What we see is temporary. That's what Krishna is saying. So this ability to be conscious, to have experiences, to be aware, that is the symptom of the presence of soul. Just as the sun gives off heat and light, this soul is giving off consciousness. So when I talk about the soul, it's not some abstract metaphysical principle. It's our just being here. That's what makes us living beings, and here in this world, sitting in a particular body on a certain date in Philadelphia. So we are fundamental, irreducible, and we are not. Our body has been cobbled together in structures of matter. It's made out of tinker toys and erector set. It's just put together. And like everything that's been put together, it's going to fall apart. And it is falling apart right now. Our body is a machine that's working under the direction of the soul, and right now it starts off, it falls apart, it puts itself together, but then as time goes on, the falling apart is going to outpace the putting together. This is called old age. And finally, the falling apart will win over the putting together entirely. And we'll have to leave. It becomes too inhospitable for us to remain. We have to go on to new territory, transmigrate and take up another body. So this is what we are. We are not these bodies. First teaching of Vedic knowledge is we are not these bodies. We are the soul. Unfortunately, we identify ourselves with the body. This is Maya. The illusion that the soul becomes under, he identifies himself, I am this body. And therefore we invent various materialistic philosophies. But if we sit back and think, we can understand here Krishna is saying, no, there's these two energies. There's matter and there's spirit. And then Krishna goes on to say, in the next verses, since we will today leave knowing everything there is to be known. The next verse is Krishna says, there is matter and there is spirit. And everything in this world has its origin in these two things. This material energy and this spiritual energy. And then where do these two energies come from? Because when we speak of energy, we also have to speak of the energetic. Just like light and heat are the energy of the sun. So those, they have a source. So Krishna says in the next verse, of all that is material and spiritual in this world, he says, know for certain that I am both the origin and the dissolution. In other words, these two energies, they come from Krishna and they go back to Krishna. He describes them as my energies. This is what he says here. As Mayapuram, these are my energy. It belongs to me, he says. So his inferior energy and his superior energy. So there is matter and there is spirit and there is the origin of both. That is Krishna. And then he says, Mata Parataram Nanyat Kinchirasti Dhananjaya. Mata Parataram Nanyat. And beyond me, if you ask what is knowledge, what is real knowledge, what is real science, it is to know matter, it is to know spirit, and is to know the origin of both. So there's this popular slogan that materialists have. They want us to believe that life comes from matter. But from this we understand, this verse tells us that life comes from life. And in fact, matter also comes from life. Because this, both prakritis come from Krishna, who's the supreme living being. So both matter and life come from life. Just like our material body is alive, but it also, like the fingernails or my head, hair on my head, they're dead. But they come out of the living body. So in that way, similar, as an example, similar way, out of Krishna comes not only the inferior material energy, but also the living being. So both life and matter come from life. The second life, we have to say, is a capital L, because there's Krishna. So this is Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, his kind of capsule overview of all that there is. Matter and spirit and the controller of both. So he gives us this map of reality, so now we know who we are and what we are supposed to do. We are not these bodies, and actually Krishna gives us instructions in this Bhagavad Gita how to act in such a way that we become self-realized. We actually come to consciousness of who we are. Because as he explains, all our suffering comes from misidentifying ourselves with the material body. For the soul, he says, there's no birth or death at any time. And yet everyone in the world is laboring under the suffering of death. Yet for us, actually, there is no birth, no death. So if we come to our original consciousness, our spiritual consciousness, our Krishna consciousness, then actually we are at peace. As long as we identify ourselves with the material body, we are always unpeaceful, always turbulent, always agitated, always fearful. Because the material world is a place where there is birth and death and disease and old age and hunger and thirst and lamentation and desire and success and failure and happiness and distress. All those things keep us in a state of turmoil, unsettled, restless state. We cannot become happy in a place. We are eternal and we are seeking happiness in a place where everything is temporary. And we're glad, it's like we're just grabbing at smoke to hold on to. And whatever we grab, it disappears. So we have to stop this grabbing business. At least we can grab, we're supposed to grab Krishna. We hold on to Krishna, Krishna is eternal, and we're eternal. That's our settled position, our true position. And from that, when we come to Krishna, we become released from all the bondage, suffering, turmoil, and distress of this material world. So in order for us to know our way around, Krishna is giving us this map so we can know what to do. If we are given a wrong map or a partial map, a little partial map which just describes some aspects of matter, and then they say, and this is all there is, then we'll never know where to go. So we've become misled by a claim of people who know a little bit to cheat and tell us they know everything. Krishna, in fact, does know everything. He's the only one in a position to know everything. So we can take his version of things. Follow this map. Maybe you've spent so many years following the other map. If you spend 7 years following the other map, find out where you've gotten. Now spend 7 years following Krishna's map. You'll see where you get. You'll see which is better. We also have a scientific process. Krishna consciousness is a scientific process of self-realization. By engaging in the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, by engaging in devotional service to Krishna, you will see that our false conception, our bondage to matter goes away, and we become established in our real spiritual identity, and we become peaceful, and we become happy. Thank you very much. We're still, I guess, looking for the person who has the red Chevy Nova with the Delaware tag 517248, if you want to. People can't park in the backyard because that's blocking. That's your car? Who, Delaware? Chevy Nova red? Anyway, it's hard for people to park because they can't get back there. We park on the grass. Any questions? Yeah. Yeah, that's called unconsciousness, isn't it? Why are we in so much illusion? Well, you can take it back. The illusion is we identify ourselves falsely with the material body. And the reason we do that is ultimately because we are looking to be what we are not. Because the actual identity of each soul, proper identity of each soul, is to be the servant of the Supreme Soul, Krishna. So suppose I do not wish to be the servant of God. So that means I want to change my identity. So suppose I want to change my identity and I pray to Krishna, please, I don't want to be your servant anymore. Let me free. This service to you is bondage. I want to be free. So Krishna says, all right, I really can't make you, because when we say I want to be free, what we mean is I want to be God. That's real freedom, right? To control everything. So we're praying to God, please make me God. Well, he says, I'm sorry, the position is taken. I am the absolute truth and you are the relative truth. That's always going to be that way. But I'll tell you what, I'll give you the illusion by which you can think you are the supreme. You want a false identity. Your real identity is you are my servant. So you want to go away from me. So I'm going to give you this kind of a costume. A kind of a robot costume. A sort of a virtual reality costume. And I'll put you in this costume made of gross and subtle matter. And I'll let you think that you are that costume. So that's what we've done. We've been projected into these costumes. Each one of us now is dressed in this outfit of a human body. And we've been in other outfits too. Outfits with compound eyes and proboscis or various sorts of wings. We've had six legs and we've had eight legs. We've had no legs. We've crawled on our bellies and we've been in dirty places. Now we've come to the human form. But we've been in all these different 8,400,000 species of life according to Padma Purana, the way they count them. And we've been through them and we have this human body. But anyway, these are outfits. They're costumes that we're put on. They fit tight with a subtle inside part, the inner face. And the gross outside part. And so we put it on and say, wow, feels good. Now I can do things, huh? That's why we forget. And then we identify with this costume and we forget that we are the soul. So we have to face birth and death in the material world, but now I can think, I am the greatest. I can be the Lord, I can be the president or the king or the this, whatever position that puts me to the top of the hill, and we can struggle to enslave each other and lord it over each other and compete to make money or to become famous and all those other things. That's what happens. So we engage in this illusory struggle for existence. So Krishna is saying, when you're sick of it, come back to me. So we are here because we should be sick of it and we're ready to come back to Krishna. And as soon as we come back to Krishna, he relieves us of this illusion and we go back to Godhead. And we say to Krishna, okay, I've learned my lesson, I'll never leave you again. That's our business. So here's a place we can come. Krishna's here. Krishna's service is here. This is the training ground for the spiritual world. A little embassy of the spiritual world plucked down here just to bring us back to Godhead. So it's a point of entry into the spiritual world, a gate of exit from the material world. In Sanskrit, this place is called a tirtha, a ford where you can cross from the spiritual world, from the material world into the spiritual world. That's where you can get out. Otherwise, you go down to the office buildings downtown and so on. It's just the prison. But this is the exit gate for those that want to get out. Yeah.
You mentioned that the soul is 1/10,000 the size of the tip of a hair.
Yeah.
Does that mean everything in the spiritual world is like little?
No. No. In the spiritual world, there are no rulers. You're as little or as big as you need to be. There's different kinds of mathematics there. And you won't be able to handle it. But here in the spirit soul, we become a little compressed. Our spiritual identity is compacted. Our spiritual senses are not developed. So